And welcome back to another episode of Creating the New Normal, Leadership in a Post-Pandemic World. This is Ben Baker and Claire Chandler. Welcome to another episode. Now, Claire, we were talking off, and we finished it off, and I kind of got it in at the last possible second of last week's episode, the word disruptive. Yeah. I'm going to let you have a couple words, and then I got to get this off my chest.
I can tell, and you really sort of wound us up for the weekend last Friday, because you started on that teaser of a rabbit hole that we're going to go into. It's going to be fun. Guys out there, anytime I can get Ben to just get real like road rage, it's really fun to watch. So you're in for a treat right now. But this came about. You and I have very similar philosophies, although different perspectives on, this whole business of ours that we do. And, I had a rant, I think, on our live session about, silos and how, companies perpetuate that. But you and I offline had talked about this concept of, disruptive and market disruption. And there's so many, going back before COVID, impacted our lives, everybody was inundated with these consultants and these coaches and these gurus and these masterminds around, disrupting your market and disrupting your career and blah, 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 blah. And it ticked me off a lot. And then when you and I were talking about it, I thought I was mad about the phrase, but you really kind of got into a rant, which I loved, by the way. So we'll just kind of go back into that moment, because like you, the concept of, to me, it's very irresponsible for someone to come in and try to incite disruption and not have the wherewithal or the social responsibility to guide that in a constructive way. And that's the reason that we're where we are in terms of this disruptive sort of climate. So I'm gonna tee you up and watch you go.
Okay, so up on the soapbox I go. To me, the word disruption has been so overused and so misused that it just drives me crazy. It's gotten down to, disruptive underwear, disruptive coffee mug, disruptive, bandana.
I think my underwear is disruptive.
You got to have disruptive underwear. But what does that mean? People are using the word disruptive to basically mean anything. Anytime something, shifts a little bit to the left or a little bit to the right, and it's new and exciting, it's disruptive. It's not disruptive. COVID-19 is disruptive. 9/11 was disruptive. The war in Syria is disruptive. Afghanistan is disruptive. World famines are disruptive. They're things that change the fabric of society. They change the fabric of our lives. It marks a moment in time where we sit there and say we can't go back, and we need to find a way forward. That to me is disruptive. The people that are using disruptive as a marketing term to sit there and say, we're new and innovative, then find another word. You'll find another word, because everybody has overused and misused the word disruptive to the point where it doesn't mean anything anymore. I had somebody, I go down to Vegas every year for a promotional marketing show, and there's a million square feet. All right, picture this. The Mandalay Bay Convention Center on one floor, there's a million square feet. There's 13 and a half miles of show floor. There's 750,000 different promotional products. And everybody is screaming that their stuff is new and disruptive. I had somebody who told me because their coffee mug kept their coffee 20 minutes longer, kept it warm, that was disruptive. They had people telling me because they've come up with a new innovative color, that was disruptive. Because they came up with a different type of lanyard, it was disruptive. None of these things are earth-shatteringly important enough that they're going to change our lives, that they're going to change the fabric of our lives, that they're going to change the way that we think about things and the way that we react to things. That's what being truly and absolutely disruptive is all about. When Microsoft created Windows, when the Apple computer came along and changed the fabric of society, that was Windows. When DOS 3.3 came along, and all of a sudden, when you were coding, you could actually go forwards and backwards instead of having to write a code. Oh, I made a mistake. You had to go all the way to the end. You had to save. You had to go back into the code. You had to go find the line again and then be able to, you know, change the code, save it, and then go back forward again. And when you could go forwards and backwards, that was innovative. That was exciting. That might have been disruptive in the day, but it changed the way that people actually, you know, did their lives and made their lives better and enabled people to be far more effective and more efficient and allowed them to be, you know, more, you know, innovative as they move forward because they were able to move in a different way and think in a different way. That's disruptive. So we need to think as companies, are we being disruptive? Are we truly changing the fabric of the world? Or are we just using this word, trying to get somebody's attention? Are we adding noise to the universe? Or are we adding value? And there's too many people out there that are, you know, making noise out there and saying that they're creating value. We need to create total value. That's where we need to be as organizations. So off I come, off my soapbox, back to the, and I leave it to you to take it from here.
Man, I haven't seen you that worked up since the concept or the topic of the mission statement last week or a couple of weeks ago. And it's for the exact same reasons. It's, you know, people use and misuse those words, that phrase, you know, to the detriment of everyone, because they just give a bad name to those who truly are changing the world, right? So yeah, this concept of disruption. You know, the examples that you used of truly disruptive entrance into the market, you know, when I'm on my deathbed, if my legacy is that I put out into the market a brand new lanyard, I want you to find me and I want you to, you know, politely or emphatically correct me, because that's not going to be my legacy as a disruptive new lanyard. But you know, the company.
But it could be new and it could be innovative.
Well, if it could be. You know, and it can change colors and.
That's right. It could have LED lights or something like that that blink on and off or stuff like that. And that's kind of cool. But that's all it is.
Exactly. But I think to your point, you know, it comes back to how are we defining things, right? And so these disruptors, who say they're disruptors but really are not. It's like we were talking last week about those old, you know, Wild West Hollywood sets that were propped up, you know, the facade of the saloon and the general store were propped up with 2x4s behind the scenes. These disruptors are all flash. The ones who use that term disruptor, not the genuine disruptors, the genuine Steve Jobs, and Elon Musk's of the world, you know, and yes, I'm setting a very high bar for if you're going to call yourself a disruptor, you'd better be on that level. You know, otherwise you're just an interrupter and you're going to be shushed and, you know, moved out of the room again. So there's true disruption, as you said, COVID-19 being one. You know, I'm on the East Coast, Superstorm Sandy, a huge one, 9/11, obviously. You know, huge disruptors that we did not necessarily see coming. It was not in the plans or in the strategy for any of us who were impacted, but it forced, just like COVID-19 is forcing us to reevaluate, to kind of reassess what we have believed is truly important. Yes, on a personal level, but you know, as a business, right? You know, what were things we were chasing that we had convinced ourselves were business relevant? You know, what were processes we were continuing to follow that we had convinced ourselves were business critical, that now because of this latest disruption, we were forced to do without? And you know what? We're still functioning. We're still getting everything done. So, you know, it's that to me is a disruption that can cause feelings of lack of control, but again, are always opportunities for companies and business leaders to say, okay, we thought we had planned for something like this, but we really didn't. We were caught a bit unawares. How do we learn from it? Mm-hmm. How do we get better as a result of it? And how do we make sure we are continuing to move forward toward our why?
Well, it's interesting that you say that, because what you say is that a true disruption is something that we never saw coming and changed our life because of it. Mm. You know, it's like the new batteries that are coming out today, that all of a sudden they go from, you know, being able to power something for 10 minutes to be able to power something for 10 hours.
Yeah.
And the millions and millions of lives that are changed because of that innovation. You know, it's truly amazing. The fact of the Elon Musks of the world, the Bill Gates of the Steve Jobs of the world, you know, even, you know, taking a look at Zuckerberg. I mean, yeah. You know, the Zuckerbergs of the world, is the fact that his vision of Facebook changed the fabric of the world and how we communicate, how we engage and how we interact, and what media truly is. You know, what is media today, and how do we communicate, and how do we add value, and how do we, you know, get our opinions made? And what it's done is it's taken this hierarchical media empire and flattened it so everybody has their own microphone. Mm-hmm. You know, it's truly disrupt. Those are the truly disruptive things in the world.
Yeah.
But we need to think and say, as an organization, are we truly at that level? And it's okay if we're not. You know, there are millions and millions and millions of businesses around the world that are not disruptive, that add value, that help millions and millions, if not billions, of clients, that take care of people, that, you know, that are worth our trust and you know, allow us to be make our lives better, but they're truly not disruptive in what they do. And as businesses and as leaders, we need to sit there and say, what is our pocket? You know, what do we truly do? Who are the people we truly serve? It's not everybody with a Visa card. You know, it is absolutely not everybody with a pulse. That is not our customer base. The question is, who are the people that we truly add value to, and why do we add value to them, and why do these people care, and how do we communicate it with them in a way that resonates with them? It has to stop being about us, and it has to start being about our people, whether it's our internal people or our external people. And we need to sit there and say, how are we adding value as a company? You know, where you came from in the very beginning of this, it's all about adding value.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have to be disruptive. It doesn't have to be always innovative. Sometimes, you know what, if you go in there and you're in a rush, and somebody, you know, gets you your coffee effectively and efficiently with a smile on their face, that can make your entire day. You know, that can make your entire day when you were in a rush and you were panicked and somebody had a smile on their face, a couple quick words for you, they got you in, they got you out, and you were able to move on with your day efficiently and you don't have the hangries anymore. You know what? Yeah. That's a great business. It's not innovative. It's not disruptive. But it's full of people who care.
Yeah.
And I think I'll take people that care any day of the week over something that is, you know, touting itself as disruptive and, as you said, is truly interruptive at best.
And what a great challenge for leaders, because, you know, as you said, and we've kind of touched upon it in previous conversations, you don't have, as a business leader, not every idea, not every initiative is innovative and world changing, right? Not everyone is Elon Musk, who said, and people thought he was nuts, which is usually a sign that you're onto something. We're going to put people on Mars.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't enough that he co-founded PayPal. It wasn't enough then that he went out and said, I'm going to make electric cars. And then it wasn't enough for him to make, you know, commercial rockets that can be reused. Now he says, you know, that these were all steps, but we're going to get to Mars and we're going to colonize Mars. You know, that all of us as kids watching the old you know, the sci-fi movies, it you know, is now might happen in our lifetimes, might. But, you know, so I said before, I set the bar high. You know, we're talking about Steve Jobs, we're talking about Elon Musk, you talked about Bill Gates. Not every leader has to, you know, change the world at that level, but you do, your role does shape the world of the people who work for you. And, you know, as you said, you can disrupt, you can shape, you can impact that world for the better, or you can do the opposite. And, you know, I had an argument once with my direct boss, and then it didn't go well, so I stopped arguing with him. But he had said something in a meeting, and it didn't go over well. And I, you know, I went to him afterwards, and I said, you know, the morale with the team is not, you know, kind of took a hit there. And he said, well, you know, that's not the way I meant my message to come out. And I said, but it did. And he said, well, I'm not responsible for how my message is received. And I, you know, I said what I said because I truly believed it, and, you know, I probably would have done it again. But, you know, what I said was, you are a leader and you absolutely have a responsibility, you know, for how your message is received. You know, and some leaders don't care. They say, you know, I've gotten to where I am. I'm in power. I have control. I have the leather chair, and, you know, you can take my message the way you want to take it. A true leader makes sure that the message is heard, it's understood, it's taken in the right way, and it's acted upon in the direction that moves us toward our why.
Yeah.
And it's honestly as simple as that. It's as simple as that.
It's true, because, you know, how many companies I've talked to, they say, well, do your people understand your mission, vision, and values? Well, they should. We talk about it once a year at our corporate retreat. Okay. Next question. Now we move forward from there. But, you know, getting back to what you were thinking, is leaders have two choices. They can take the rocks and they can hold them close to their chest, or they can drop them in the water and let the ripples create create the ripples. And I think that the true leaders are the ones that are dropping the pebbles, letting them fall where they lie, and watching the ripples occur. Because you're right. I will never change the world. I never will. I'm never going to be president. I'm never going to be Elon Musk. I'm never going to be Bill Gates, whatever. But I can change my corner of the world. I can influence those who I can influence. And I mentor up the universities, because every semester it's me up in front of 200 kids that I get to instill my vision on what leadership and what, you know, what true leadership truly is. And by doing that, they hopefully 5 or 10 or 20 or 30 of them will take that, internalize it, and it will make them better people. And if they take that and then they go and become better leaders themselves, it's just the ripple effect that happens. And all I can do is I can control my corner of the world. And, you know, my buddy Peter Turin says it's easy to do and it's easy not to do. Mm-hmm. And I love that philosophy of easy to do, easy not to do, because you can either hold the rock next to your chest and say, this is my knowledge, I'm going to keep it, nobody can have it. Or you can sit there and say, you know what, how can I help other people be better? And I choose, and I hope that the leaders listening to this choose to empower their team and help their team be better, because when they do that, they're going to inspire greatness in others that they probably never even realize where they're going to go with it.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. You mentioned last week, you used the phrase good to great, which, of course you're familiar with the book by, Jim Collins. You know, what's interesting in that is a lot of leaders, and Collins goes into this at great length, and we've witnessed this, right? A lot of leaders think the true mark of their success as a leader is that things fall apart without them. And the direct opposite is true, right? Mm-hmm. The truly great companies are the ones that not only continue to survive and keep the lights on after the Jack Welch and the, you know, the Bill Gates or whoever has left, but continues to thrive, continues to evolve, continues to improve, and continues to move toward that why, right? Continues to shape a brand story that is positive and gives back. You know, and your metaphor of the rocks rings so true for me, because I do think a lot of leaders hold on to that insecurity that you know, individual contributors do, which is, if I share my knowledge, I become less valuable. If other people know what I know, then I become expendable. Well, I have news for you. Whether you're a frontline worker or the CEO, everyone at some point is replaceable, right? So rather than worry about being replaced because you are stingy with your knowledge, look at it as you were never meant to hide what you're truly talented at, what you truly know, what you can truly give with the world, you know, your corner of it, right? Yeah. It is your obligation, especially as a leader, to share what you know, what you have, you know, what you can do. And again, it kind of goes back to what we talked about last week, this concept of, are you pursuing a leadership track because you're ambitious or because you're aspirational? Yeah. And if you're ambitious, you tend to hold on to knowledge as your competitive edge. If you're aspirational, you see it as gifts to share with the world.
Oh, I love that. And just going to say one more thing and then let this thing go, is that, to bring it all full circle, very few leaders are disruptive. Very few leaders are going to change the world in, you know, ways that other people haven't thought about. But millions and millions, if not billions, of leaders out there are going to make people's lives better and are going to help make things better and make people's lives better and change little things about how people live their lives. And that should never be belittled. That should never be belittled. If you can change one person's life, if you can make one person's lives better, if you can help one person achieve their greatness, you've been an amazing leader. And I think that's what we need to be thinking of, is we don't have to always hit the home runs. We need to hit solid, you know, we need to get on base. We need to get on base. We need to connect with people. We need to make sure that people go around the bases and runs get scored. And it may not be us that hits the home run. It may not be us that drives in the winning run. But when we're there, when it happens, we had a part of it. And I think that's where leaders need to be thinking of. So I want to leave it there. Claire, it has been absolutely a pleasure once again. Yeah. This has been Ben Baker, Claire Chandler. This is Creating the New Normal, Leadership in a Post-Pandemic World. Keep joining us. We love having you here.